Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Nathan Totten, and I'm joined by Michael Washam and Nick Harris, as usual. This week we have a really exciting episode. This is our, we're going to be talking about our all-up spring launch, so a whole bunch of new things. For the news, we're not actually going to go into much of detail because pretty much everything on this show is news. So I think, unless you have any exciting announcements, Nick?
No
announcements. In the news, Nick hasn't shaved in
quite a while. Are you going to talk about the new beard?
Quite a while. Since the last episode.
Oh yeah, you normally shave on
Tuesday
on Fridays. Yes. Okay. So anyway, yeah, huge launch with Windows Azure Spring release. A lot of exciting things: VMs, Windows Azure websites, and whole bunch of new stuff with SDK, cloud services, almost too much stuff to
Visual Studio.
New Visual Studio tools for both Visual Studio 2010 and 2012. So that's exciting. And a whole bunch of other stuff. So to start off with, we're going to have, we're all going to do some demos. Okay. Michael's going to go into and talk to, you're going to talk about PowerShell commandlets, right?
I am, because that's the only reason I'm ever on Cloud Cover is talk about PowerShell. I actually am going to talk about PowerShell. But before I talk about PowerShell, want to highlight one interesting thing that you forgot to name off your news is we now have a new portal.
Clearly,
as you guys can see, this is it's a HTML5 portal. It's completely redesigned, very powerful, intuitive. What other kind of cool words would you would a designer describe this?
Yeah,
as?
I mean it's sort of metro-y. It's really nice and
gonna get all the abilities in usability.
Usability, yes. But the cool thing about it is that since it's HTML5, it runs you can use it on an iPad.
Right. Any browser.
Yeah, any browser. So that's cool.
And it's true. There's not all the functionality is in there yet. We don't have Traffic Manager. We don't have There's a couple of things that you'll still have to work with the old management portal for, but for the most part, we got all the cool stuff, all the major areas of functionality in, and the existing management portal is still there if you for the other services until they're onboarded into the new portal. So, what we could show, we're going to show VMs first, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you want to give us a quick tour of the portal?
So. In the first portal, first part of it, you have this All Items link, which basically lists every entity in your entire subscription. So this view gives you your virtual machines, gives you cloud services, storage accounts, websites, databases, etc. From there, you have Windows Azure websites, which you're going to show in here in just a little bit. Hopefully, everyone will have heard a little bit of this by the time they see our show. But if not, you'll do a great introduction for that. And virtual machines, so I actually have a few since I'm going to do a demonstration.
So just on the VM one, before we move on, can you clarify the difference between a virtual machine and a VM role in a cloud service? They're not the same thing.
No, they're not the same thing at all. So VM role, if you're new to Windows Azure, just gives you some enlightenment. If you're existing Windows Azure, you probably already know this. But VM role basically allows you to create an image that you put all your software up on and then run inside of a cloud service as a stateless instance. So it's just like all the other Windows Azure instances. Whenever it's recycled for a health check or whatever, you lose all your data that was on it. That's why you have to store all your data in Windows Azure Storage or SQL Azure. You can't store anything on a local disk.
Right.
What's new with Windows Azure VMs is they're basically persistent. You have a C drive that you can put data on, and it stays there. It comes in really handy for running applications like SQL Server or SharePoint or IS or whatever you need to do.
Nice.
So VM roles still exist, though, because there's still a really big use for them because lots of applications or lots of customers do like the PaaS model where they don't have to manage it, and there's still a need for having long-running installs or whatever deployed into VM roles. So that will still exist alongside of the new VMs.
Right.
So we'll go into that in just a bit. So the rest of the tour, you still have your cloud services. Little different model here, or a different UI. We can go into Cloud Server. Oh, I don't have anything deployed. Oh, here we go. So here's one of them that's actually deployed. It's a cloud service that has my VMs in it. And after a while of using this, you'll understand the architecture. But you can
all kinds of new cool stuff. The nice HTML5 graphs and charts.
Right.
And the blue spinny, what, is there a name for that yet? The blue spinning wheel.
The blue
spinning progress bar. But it's not really a progress bar. It's just sort of...
It's a, hey, wait for data bar.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I personally like it, the swirly. Yeah. It's very, I don't know, right. It's pretty.
But you can see right in the portal, you can see a rough estimate of your CPU usage. So I was actually going through and doing a lot of deployment. So you can see at 1025, I was spiked all the way up to 84% on this VM. Mm. So you can do quite a bit of interesting stuff here. So we'll cover that a little bit more later. And we still have SQL Azure. Don't have any created yet, but we do have an interface for it. And, of course, your storage counts. This is actually really interesting because previously storage counts in the previous portal didn't really show a whole lot of functionality. You could create them and delete them, but that was about it. Now with Windows Azure, with the portal, you can actually go in and you get your URLs. My monitoring chart's not available yet because I haven't configured monitoring. New feature that's been added is geo-replication. So that allows you to take your data will be replicated to a different data center within the same region.
So we've always replicated it for backup purposes, but
now
this
you
is
can actually see it.
The customer has access to it now.
Right.
So that's...
And from the API, they can actually turn this on and off.
And last week we had, or actually... 3 days ago, we were a little late with publishing the episode, but we had Jay on to talk about storage services, and he alluded to some of this stuff. But yeah, that's one of the exciting new features that. And Jay will have a talk at TechEd that'll be published online that he'll go into a lot more detail on storage.
And just a quick tour of what you can do on the storage features that you guys probably covered. Here's how you can turn on geo replication. If you're used to seeing storage analytics, this was released, I think, last November. Mm-hmm. You can now configure it to the portal. The last time, the only way was through PowerShell and the APIs. So really powerful stuff here in the portal now. So now that you've seen all the interesting storage stuff, there is one more area, the virtual networks. So this is an area where you can configure Windows Azure Virtual Networks, and it does two really key things for you. VNets allow you to create a hybrid network from your Windows Azure cloud all the way back to your data center. And unlike Windows Azure Connect, it's not machine to machine. It's actually network to network. So this is true site to site virtual private networking. The other interesting thing this allows you to do is even without a VPN gateway. So if you're a customer that doesn't have any need for VPN, it allows you to subnet your virtual machines and your cloud services up in the cloud. So this gives you persistent IP addresses on the private network. It's really powerful and very useful for deploying really big, complicated infrastructure deployments.
Cool. Mm. And one of my favorite things about the portal is sort of the new unified management bar at the bottom, right? So you have kind of, like it's a familiar place where if you want to delete, start a service, delete a service, whether it be a SQL database or a website. And then also you see that big new button, which is sort of you want to click that.
Your start menu.
Yeah, your Windows Azure start menu type thing. But you have one place where you can go and create new website, new storage account, a new VM, all kinds of different things. And you've got the different options, quick create or create from gallery or custom create, things like that. So a really clean, really clean, simplified way to manage all your different
entities.
Creations of entities, yes.
And you're right, on every change of entity every time you switch entities here, you do get different toolbars down at the bottom, different functionality. So for storage, you always know that for each storage item, you can manage the keys or delete it. And same thing for SQL databases. Here you can click add. So very common user interface, very consistent.
Cool.
Okay, so let's create something, which is always the funnest. So we'll go ahead and create a virtual machine. And so, like you said, there's two options here. You can do a quick create and from gallery. Quick create is really just for spinning up a new virtual machine based off one of our platform images. It doesn't give you a lot of configuration options that you can just initially start off with. Gallery gives you a little bit more flexibility. So I can do gallery, and it'll pull up all the platform images that we have right out of the box. And you'll see we have a SQL Server 2012 Evaluation Edition that's so you can literally just click through this wizard, and it'll spin up a new SQL Server VM up in the cloud. We have the Server 2012 release candidate, and some surprising
This is a mistake, right?
Yeah.
What are these for? This is Microsoft. That's a mistake, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what these are for, but they allow you to do something with some other OS, Linux or something. I've heard of it, but
so that's a pretty. I mean, all joking aside, that's a pretty huge deal.
Yeah,
I mean, we now have Linux VMs in Windows Azure.
Right, it's a huge step. It's basically allows you to take your application that you've been working on in a heterogeneous environment, not all Windows, and move the entire thing up in the cloud if you can. It gives you a lot more flexibility. That we recognize that, unfortunately, not all of our customers are a pure Microsoft shop. Still want them to work there, but we're open. We're working on flexibility. We want you to be able to run whatever application you want up in the cloud.
Yep. Nice. But this is really cool because even for cloud service developers or website developers, like for example, a website developer like Windows Azure Websites, which I'll show in a bit, we support Node.js. But a lot of Node developers want to use something like, you know, say MongoDB is quite popular, or Redis,
right,
which, you know, we don't have services for those. So if you want to use, you know, the really simple PaaS model of you know, websites or cloud services to run your Node.js app, but you need something additional like Redis or Mongo, you can now run those, you know, on the operating system they were more or less meant to run on,
right?
And then still use the really simple model of cloud services or websites. So
right,
this is really cool. Even if you only have one or two things that run on Linux, I think this opens a whole new set of scenarios for Windows Azure developers.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and actually create a VM. I'll pick the Windows Server 2012 release candidate. And main thing it wants to know is, what are you going to name your server? So I'll call it
Cloud Cover Dragons.
Cloud Cover Dragons. Sure, that sounds great.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that won't work.
Why?
It's a machine name. It can only be 15 characters.
Oh.
How about CC Dragons?
Okay. Fine, that's acceptable. File a bug. With Windows.
Dang NetBIOS names. So once we decide our machine name, our password, then we pick out how big the VM we need to be. These are the same instance sizes you're used to if you're working with Windows Azure today. So I'll go ahead and spin up a small instance. So I don't
any difference in parsing between VM instance size and, say, cloud service?
The VM instance pricing in the preview, I think, is going to be different. But
right,
long term, I think they're going to be similar.
Okay.
We picked the different instance sizes. I'll go ahead and pick small just because my subscription quota is small.
Come on, you work for Microsoft.
I know. You think I could just spin up hundreds of cores, right? Well, we are, but that's for a different problem. So here you have two different options. You have the standalone virtual machine and connect to an existing virtual machine. What this actually means is whenever you create a VM, under the covers, it's still using the Windows Azure service model. So there's a cloud service, and your VM is a role inside of the cloud service. So if you just pick standalone cloud or virtual machine, it will create your VM. It'll actually create a cloud service for you, but it actually won't show it in the portal. If you do connect to an existing virtual machine, it's assuming you have one built already that you want to add to that same cloud service. So I have two sets of VMs here. I have a cloud cover VMs, which is a demo I'm going to show shortly, and a standalone virtual machines. So I'm going to go ahead and just pick one of these. And what it's actually doing, it's not connecting to that virtual machine. It's adding this VM to the cloud service container. Right. And the beauty is, whenever it boots up, it'll be on the same network, and all the other three VMs, Web 1, Web 2, and SQL 1, they'll all be able to see it, all on the same network.
Cool. Right.
So you can definitely mix and match. You don't need to have all of your, you know, you could have cloud services for, say, your web front end,
right,
and then have, say, SQL Server running on Windows Server 2012 as your VM and mix those all together.
Right. They can be completely isolated, or they can all be on the same network. Or the beauty of this is, I'm not going to show the demo of this today, but if you have two cloud services, and these don't even have to be VMs, these can just be two cloud services that are all pure PaaS, Web RL worker role, you can actually put them on a virtual network and they can both be on the same network now.
Cool.
So that's a big jump for us as well. The last option here is availability sets. This is really useful whenever you're pairing two servers with the same functionality, like two web servers or two SQL servers. What it essentially does is, if you have two SQL servers, for instance, it'll actually, whenever you add these to an availability set, it'll put both of the VMs on separate racks in your data center. So if we lose an entire rack, your application is still running. The other thing it does is, it works similar to update domains from the web and worker roles, is as we do upgrades to the host OS, we don't take both sides of your application down at once.
So your VM, can you opt out of having them automatically roll out those updates that you're just talking about then?
No.
Well, they don't. Yeah, because they don't actually update with VMs. We don't actually do patching of
right,
the OS.
Right.
It's more for the underlying host OS, right, which right. that yeah. Gotcha. I mean, it could go down, or it could need to be maintenance on it.
What we do is we give you an API, and I believe there's going to be something soon in the management portal that gives you a schedule over whenever those updates are going to be. Right. So that way you can plan for it and be aware of it.
Cool.
So from there, I'll go ahead and click the checkbox, and it should spin up my VM. You can see
this
it
is
at the bottom.
Another part of the portal. All the sort of status messages, whether it's creating a storage account, a VM, deleting something, are all kind of appear down there also, and you can click for details.
Right.
If you get an error, you can kind of hopefully the error doesn't happen, but you can click on it and find out what the error was. Like a common situation I had was, you can't delete, what is it? You can't delete a storage account if you have an image.
If you have images or device disks in it.
And I kind of was like, I had one that I made and I didn't know it had a VM or a disk in it.
Right.
And I tried to delete it and it was giving me an error. So you can click and see exactly what the error is.
Yeah. And that's actually a really good thing. That way you don't accidentally go delete all the underlying disks out of your VM.
Which is what I was going to do read the error message. Oh, yeah, okay. I probably shouldn't do that. But
saving you from yourself.
Yep.
So you can see in the VM screen that CC Dragons is starting its provisioning. So let me show you something that I already have booted up. So I have three servers here. I have another one that I'm currently not using for anything. But I have a SQL server that I provisioned just this morning, and I have two web applications. Both of these are running IIS. So I'll go ahead and click on Web 1.
There's your progress bar.
Yeah, there's your progress bar. Pretty. And you notice the only endpoint I have open right now is RDP.
Right.
So if I wanted to RDP into this guy, I just click connect and open, and a few dialogues later.
What's your password?
It's really creative. It's actually what is your password.
So now everyone can go in and use that VM for free.
I'm going to delete this soon. Yeah. No. So it'll let me RDP into the box, and you can see that I've actually been doing a little diagnostics, make sure everything works. So what I want to show is I have a little web application deployed here, and this is actually running on the local machine, so I'm just browsing localhost, and you can see the web app's actually running.
That's beautiful.
It is. It's beautiful. I don't know who designed this, but it's just awesome.
What can you buy in the Azure store?
You can buy ball bearings.
A blade? What is this?
Cable lock.
A chain. Is this for fighting? Is this like
hold on. You laugh, but let me show you something really nice. See, I can type in chain and hit search. And it chains searched. So you have to wonder, so what
where's
kind
your
of
data store?
What kind of amazing technology allows you to search? That's SQL Server full text search, something our Azure customers would
ask. I thought you were joking. No, search is not like, oh my gosh, what is this? I thought you were talking about the Ajax sort of thing there.
No.
To clarify here, so SQL Azure has been renamed to Azure SQL Database.
Right.
So what you're saying is in this VM at the moment, Azure SQL Database, which isn't a VM, which is like SQL Server as a service, does not support full text search.
Correct.
But with VMs now, you can deploy your SQL Server to a VM, and then you can take advantage of the full capability.
That's correct. So right now, this machine, I don't have a ICMP enabled in my firewall, but this machine is actually connected to another virtual machine running full-blown SQL Server 2012.
Right.
I have the database deployed, and I have full text catalog enabled, so I can actually use a full text search feature of SQL Server, which is something that a lot of our customers have been asking for a long time.
Awesome.
So what? So is that a? I mean, that seems kind of is that a hack, or is that actually a supported scenario?
It's everything in SQL Server is fully supported.
Cool. So what?
Except always on, which we'll talk about.
So we support what sort of apps do we verify some apps, or we say do we verify them or do we support them, or
support is there's two different versions of support. Support is if you put it on Windows Azure VM and you configure it correctly and for some reason it doesn't work and we fully support it, or some areas that we don't fully support because we haven't fully tested on, doesn't mean that we're going to block you from running it. Yep. It just means if you can't get it to work and you call support, we're not going to be able to help you.
And what are we've verified SQL and what?
We've verified SQL, we've verified Active Directory, we've verified SharePoint. There are a few other ones, but there's stuff like when Microsoft Link does not run exactly well on a VM, and Dynamics CRM is one that we're still working on.
Cool.
And the reason for CRM specifically that I know of is because our load balancer doesn't support true sticky sessions. Mm. In not all applications, if your application has a hard dependency on sticky sessions, then it's probably not the best way to migrate out here if you need multiple machines. So speaking of load balancer, we configured one VM to talk to SQL Server, but it's local. I don't have an endpoint open for port 80, so let's talk about how we actually do configure that load balancer. So I'm going to go in endpoints, and I'm going to add a new endpoint. So for my endpoint, I'll just call it HTTP. This is just a friendly name, whatever you want to call it. It's not a protocol.
Can you call it Dragons?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Call it Dragons HTTP, because it is
an
endpoint.
Can you call it Cloud Cover Dragons? Is 15 characters?
Could you show us what protocols are available there?
15, haha. No net bias, that's just arbitrary.
Okay. Another bug.
Yeah, so from protocols, we support TCP or UDP, which is a brand new addition to Windows Azure release as well. And at this point, you can tell it to listen on port 80, and really neat trick is we have a concept called port forwarding. Port forwarding allows you to listen on one port, say 5,000, and forward it internally to a VM on another port. Nice. It's kind of a NAT for ports. So I actually want to listen on port 80 and forward port 80, so I'm just going to leave them both there. And what it'll do is it's actually configuring a load balancer for that specific VM to listen on port 80 and forward those requests. So as soon as it's actually configured that load balancer, we should be able to browse directly to this site and actually see it running live on a cloud. While it's doing that, let me show you the interface for configuring multiple machines to listen on the same port. So I have Web 2 here for a reason. It's the exact same application. Not 100% sure if it'll let me do it since the other one's not configured yet, but we'll give it a shot. So I can do add endpoint, and yeah, see it's not available yet.
Because the other one's still
chugging.
Spinning.
And what it does is it actually takes that endpoint and it uses all the settings so you can configure a load balance set. And all a load balance set is multiple machines all having the same configuration of endpoint with a name on it. That way the load balancer says, okay, these guys are all listening for the same requests over the same port.
So if you have like a web farm, or if you wanted to host, whatever, if you wanted to host SQL for some reason publicly,
right,
you could set the ports and have your SQL farm or whatever.
Right.
What do you
call if you wanted
to do... You call it a SQL farm, I don't know, what do you call it?
I wouldn't call it a cluster because that term is taken.
Okay.
Right, but if you wanted...
SQL
server would be a good example. You'd create a new endpoint, set the public port to be something, and the internal port would be 1433.
Yep.
And then, of course, you'd want to lock it down with your firewall so not everyone is, managing your SQL server for you.
Unless you want to live on the edge.
If you want to live on the edge, that's true.
And have the admin username and password be the password.
So a good point on the firewalls, you can actually restrict access to a subset of IPs out there.
Right. Now this uses a Windows Server firewall by default. So there's not ACLs on endpoints yet. I think that's on our roadmap. But for actually managing traffic to the individual virtual machines, you can use the firewall built into Linux or the firewall built into Windows to configure it. So, looks like our endpoint's actually created. So let's go into Web 2, and we'll create a new endpoint here. And now now the radio button is enabled. I can pick the endpoint we made. You can actually name this one something completely different if you wanted to. I don't know if that's too much. There we go. Probably still too much.
Didn't you practice?
I know. What's up with me?
You look so unhappy.
Yeah,
this is an outrage.
Yes.
So now it's creating the second endpoint. And if you notice in the column over here on the right, it says load balance equals yes. So that tells you that this VM is actually load balance. And once this is enabled, you can actually click on edit and you can see all the VMs that it's actually enabled with. So let's go ahead and see if my endpoint actually worked.
Is it the same that as you can add them in, you can, let's say, something on one of those is not behaving correctly, can you remove them from the load balancer and then go on RDP into it?
Yep, you can.
Troubleshoot it, then bring it back in.
So there's some more advanced stuff you can do with PowerShell with the endpoints.
Always pushing PowerShell.
I know. It's just so useful. So one of the things you can do on endpoints is, in addition, beyond the portal, is you can configure custom probes. So whenever I create an endpoint, I can say, hey, check this.
It's not.
That's what it's
completely.
Calls it. It'll be called. Okay.
No, we're not.
We're going to call this a custom help check.
No, we're going to keep all of that in. That's awesome. Keep going.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. He's like quivering. I couldn't stop.
I could see him in the corner of my eye.
Yeah.
So through PowerShell, one of the things you can do to above and beyond the portal is to enable custom health checks.
Or custom probes, as they've been called.
Right, thank you.
But what do they do?
What they allow you to do is to specify a URL actually on the virtual machine that tests your application to make sure it's available. This could actually be checking the database, make sure it's responding in time, checking to make sure that certain files are available. Whatever your application needs to say to that it's healthy, this page can do. And as long as it's in your check, you return a 200 to the load balancer, it stays in the load balancer. If you return anything other than 200, the load balancer will automatically kick it out.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's very cool. Comes in very handy. So as you can see, we actually are running a live IS, not a web role, IS talking back to a SQL server now over Windows Azure in the cloud. Our full text search still works, so I'll do something different.
Bear. That doesn't only weapons and oh,
that
does right. exist.
Bearing ball
Chain
and beating ball.
And, blade.
Right. So you can see that we have a fully functional application that required absolutely not a single code change to make it run up in the cloud. And I think that's really the key why we're going with VMs is you don't have to re-architect them. You don't have to learn a new methodology or new architecture. You just take your existing application, as long as it doesn't require sticky sessions, move it up in the cloud, and it should just work.
Yeah. Cool.
So earlier you said true sticky sessions aren't supported. What's supported there and what's not?
Well, with sticky sessions, generally, if your application depends on it, load balancers use things like source IP addresses, or they'll use cookies to determine which VM you should go to.
Right.
And our load balancer just doesn't do that just yet. So if you have an application that every time a user hits your application, that user has to always go back to the same server, our load balancer doesn't do that automatically for you. There are some routing requests that you can do in software to make this work, but at the load balancer level, it doesn't work.
Okay.
So let me show one more thing. So here's our endpoint, and you can see down at the bottom that the load balancing status, web 1 and web 2,
cool.
It does show up. Okay, so you can't get rid of me without letting me talk about PowerShell. as much as you'd like.
We have a great editor.
Yeah.
Yeah, this part's gone.
It's gone.
Carry on, though. We'll be...
We have nothing else to do. So in PowerShell, we've made a lot of changes. The first change is after the release, I'm no longer the developer / PM of it. It's actually moved over to the Windows Azure engineering team, so it's going to be fully supported. The beauty of this is whenever you file a bug, there's a really good chance it'll actually get fixed. Not to say that I didn't fix
bugs. He was just literally ignoring all
I
of
was.
You. All the times he was on the show and saying, oh, we're going to fix that bug, literally did
Total
not
lies.
Do any of those. Sleeping at his desk.
Right. No. We did have to make some sacrifices to get it moved over to engineering. Since the PowerShell commandlets cover such a wide range of technology, Traffic Manager, SQL Azure, et cetera, we had to go off and work with all the different engineering teams so they can own this different technology. Some of them were ready right at launch, and some of them are still working on it. The stuff that we're shipping right out of the box is the existing deployment commandlets, so deploying web and worker roles, managing all that good stuff, and infrastructure as a service, all the VMs and VNets. The stuff that didn't make it yet is Traffic Manager, SQL Azure, and Windows Azure Diagnostics. The existing commandlets will still be on the CodePlex site, so if you have a hardware requirement to still use those, they're still there. It's just not going to be in this new release just yet. Yeah. Those are coming, though.
And some of the news, the Windows Azure websites isn't in there yet either.
Correct.
So this is, I mean, everyone doesn't like their favorite feature making it in, but in the long run, this is actually a really good,
right.
really good thing. I mean, this is moving from, you're really building out you know, you're just not, you yourself aren't an engineering team. It's just, it was just mainly you working on it. So as good of a job as you've done.
We did have a really good engineering team helping me, so I'm not going to take all credit for
it. But. Yes, I thought you wrote all of it yourself.
I tried, but I had a lot of help, even still.
Yeah. But the point is, like, now, you know, now this is, it's going to be fully supported.
Right.
You know, they're doing testing. It's going to be, part of the product.
It'll be part of the product.
So in this release, it's maybe not as, you know, if you really like Traffic Manager, you may be disappointed. But in the end, I think this will be a really good step forward.
And the cool thing is, we've added so much new functionality, you won't even miss the other stuff. So one of the things I want to show is just a little bit of the new stuff around VMs. So I have a script here that I'll show you in just a second. What I want to show is some of the statuses. So I have a new commandlet here called get Azure VM that basically lists all the VMs that I have.
Everything I was watching up here. And also a new feature about the new PowerShell is they don't work.
You're right. Yeah.
I was looking at the wrong screen.
All the VMs that you see, that you saw in the portal, you can access from a headless environment directly from PowerShell. I'll put this on there so it's cleaned up. And if you want more detail about it, you can specify the service name, which is cloud cover VMs. See, if we'd have got dragons, and that would have been a lot more typing. And so I could do, say, web one. And this will actually, instead of just enumerating all the VMs, it gives me all the details. It tells me the status, whether it's ready, what the power state is, what the actual individual IP address is, gives me the DNS name, all the interesting stuff you'll need. Now, let me pick on SQL one here, because I want to show some really interesting. So I'll pull up SQL one, and I'll say get Azure data disk, so I can figure out how much storage this guy has. So you can see that I have what was returned is two data disks. One of them is called data, and the other one's called logs. Logical disk size in gigabytes is 20. So I have a little bit of space. What I could do is I could actually add additional storage to this dynamically, or I could actually change the VM size, or I could configure the endpoints. Anything you really need to do, you can actually do from PowerShell.
And actually, probably more, right? I mean, you can do more through PowerShell than you can through the portal?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that the portal just can't do yet. We can change the disk caching. We can set the DNS settings for joining AD. So you can actually provision a bunch of VMs up in the cloud that'll automatically join Active Directory, which, if you're an Active Directory administrator, has to deploy those servers, you'll appreciate that. That way you don't have to join it magically every time. So let me show real quick how you can actually update an existing VM. So Web 1, I don't think it has any data storage on it. So return back nothing. So let's add some. Say we needed to add an additional drive to hold our web logs. So I can say add Azure data disk. And I could actually attach an existing one if I had uploaded one, or I can create a new one. And disk size in gigabytes, I'll say need one for 100 gigs.
1 million.
Yeah, it can actually be up to a terabyte, so quite a bit. And specify the LUN, which is the slot on the machine it'll run on. And then I can say update Azure VM. And it'll actually get that virtual machine, add a data disk to it, call update, and you could literally log into the VM, run Disk Manager, and it'll be there. It doesn't require a reboot or anything.
Nice. That's cool.
Hot add and hot remove of storage.
That's really cool. And I mean, over the past few weeks, I've seen you do some really, I mean, this stuff is like, you can write a script that basically, you know, file new, you know, SharePoint site, or deploy AD, deploy SharePoint, configure it, add disks, all kinds of stuff.
Spin up just multiple VMs. Like the little demo that I showed a while ago with two web servers and a SQL server, I wrote a script for that just so I could show what it would actually look like. So the script here, it's not overly complicated. These are the image names that I use to create the virtual machines, and you can get those image names from calling get Azure VM image. And for each one, I call new Azure VM config. I configure the virtual machine. So here's this setting right here configures my SQL server with two data disks. This one right here configures Web 1. See, now you know my password. And this one configures Web 2.
Mm-hmm. That's your bank password,
that
too,
is.
Right?
Fidelity works really well. not very much in there,
Jay,
though.
Jay, don't think Fidelity lets you use symbols.
Probably not.
They're one of those banks that I...
So once we configure all three of the VMs, I just have to pass each one of those. You can see SQL VM, Web 1, and Web 2 into the new Azure VM call, and it'll literally go off and create all these VMs for you. And you can do some really interesting stuff. If you provision a Linux VM, you can wait till it boots up, SSH into it, and configure it. And if you have a Windows machine that has remote PowerShell configured, you can do the same thing. You can wait for the machine to boot up, log in, configure IIS, download something, completely automate your deployments up in the cloud. All through PowerShell.
Wow, that's awesome. No, good work. That's really cool. I mean, a lot of people are using the PowerShell stuff now, and with the new VM features, I think we're gonna have a lot more people. I mean, this is because you can also, like, through PowerShell, you could actually deploy a VM that had like the PowerShell remote management enabled, right? And then use like the Windows PowerShell commandlets to do all kinds of stuff in Windows. I mean, you could really automate just really an unlimited amount of stuff without touching any portal. And I mean, if you had some process, like I imagine if I'm a customer that has like a really big app, or if I'm a, you know, ISV that has a really big application that maybe has SharePoint, some other stuff, you know, SQL, and has to do some custom configuration, I mean, you could make a whole script that, like, you know, automated like
deployment,
new
right.
customer boom, and all of a sudden you have 50 VMs right. running in Windows Azure. So I think some really cool stuff.
Right, and the really wonderful thing about this is underlying using the same Windows Azure Source Management API that ISVs are used to now, except this is all new functionality. So all the management ISVs out there will be able to immediately start doing the exact same thing. So they'll be able to build management applications that can automate all of this stuff. Not to say everyone shouldn't use PowerShell, but there are cases when you
some
might want to do it programmatically.
Like
I know, right? But all this functionality is exposed to the API. So you don't have to use PowerShell. You can completely do it from any language. It's all just a big REST API.
Cool. Yeah. Sweet.
Awesome.
All right. Well, that was a whole lot of new stuff, and we right. have even more. So mm-hmm. let's take a break.
Bye.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back with our next set of demos. All right, and we're back for part two of our probably what's going to be a really long episode, so I apologize for that, but all kinds of good stuff. So the next thing I'm going to demo and talk about is Windows Azure Websites. Windows Azure Websites is a new hosting model we have in the cloud in Windows Azure. It's high-density web hosting. So with Windows Azure Websites, you can host not only, you know, what you would expect, ASP.NET sites, but also Node.js and PHP applications. So, which a lot of people are asking, oh, well, I can do that with cloud services now. So this is, I would think about Windows Azure Websites as even another level higher in the stack. So with cloud services, you can still manage parts of your, you know, parts of your application. You still kind of deal with configuring your web server, tweaking it, things like that. The idea with Windows Azure Websites is we actually even abstract away, you know, the OS, even abstract away to a degree the web server you're actually running on. So you don't even really care. You can, you know, this is a very fast, very powerful, but also lightweight, you know, very low management from a standpoint of a developer way to host websites. So I think the best thing best way to start this is to just jump right into the demos, and I think you'll see the awesome power
it is.
Yeah, it's really hard to explain because it's just like it's way better just to show it because it's
right.
so easy. So let's start with the portal that we saw. Let's just create a brand new Windows Azure website. We're gonna do quick create. Let's call this Cloud Cover Dragon. And it works.
You're just showing
it
off
works.
Here.
See? My technology works. No, I'm just
amazing.
Let's just do this in my demo account.
What you're saying is you don't have a NetBIOS name.
I
think
correct.
That's a deficiency.
Well, yes, perhaps. So you see here, just took a couple seconds to create the website. Now let's go and open Cloud Cover Dragon. So the really cool thing about Windows Azure Websites is there's a lot of different deployment options. You can use Web Deploy, or you can use FTP if you want to go old school. You can use Web Deploy. You can use TFS. Or you can use Git deployment, which is my most favorite one, I guess.
Your preferred.
My preferred. They're all, TFS is great, but I prefer the lightweight Git way. So the first thing that I'll demo is Web Deploy from Visual Studio. So to get started, we just download this this publish profile, save that, and go to Visual Studio, and we're just going to create a normal Windows Azure, let's just do a, or not a Windows Azure, excuse me, just a normal I'm on NV, I'm on .NET 2 for some reason, going old school there. Let's just create an empty MVC4 web application. And the, let's just do the internet app. So the thing to note about this is I'm not creating a cloud service. This is a regular web application. Has this doesn't even doesn't depend on the Windows Azure SDK, anything like that. So extremely lightweight. So we see we just have a normal website here. And let's just click publish. And this is using the new Windows, or this is the new web deploy UI. So we import a published profile that we just downloaded, Cloud Cover Dragon. And we see that it sets all the settings for us, the username, the password, everything. So super easy. We've got other settings, but I'll just click publish. And we see here really quick, publish started. Awkward pause.
And you might want to highlight that you're actually doing this all in DevElement, or Visual Studio 2012.
Yes.
RC candidate.
They're always changing the names.
I know. I can't keep track of it. But your eyes are not deceiving you. The so UI does look different.
I noticed there in Visual Studio there was no cloud project for this.
Correct. Yeah, as I said, this is just a normal MVC4 web application. No dependent, like literally you don't even need the Windows Azure SDK installed to do any of this. And there we go. I have my new website, cloudcoverdragon.azurewebsites.net. So a different different host or a different root URL or a different domain. Yeah. Cloud apps are for VMs and cloud services. And websites are actually at azurewebsites.net.
Can you CNAME to this?
And yeah, of course, you can CNAME, use your own domain just like before. And you could even use your own domain with SSL, you know, anything like that. So a lot of cool things. So that, I mean, that's really it, which isn't, it's a really quick demo, but it's super easy, right?
And super fast.
And super fast, yeah.
Lightning to get speed to get started.
So now, the next thing I'll show, so right now we're deployed to, so this is high density hosting, right? This is a shared hosting model, but don't think about this as traditional shared hosting. I mean, this isn't just isolated in your, you know, app pool isolation. This is, we built sort of this whole new hosting platform. It's kind of almost a custom IIS server that completely isolates every host into their own little miniature VM, almost. So even though you're sharing like a physical, you know, or a virtual machine with other tenants, you're really completely isolated, completely secure. You can run in full trust, you know, so this is not, you know, lightweight, limited, whatever. Very powerful, very, very high scale. And so if you want to scale this, right now this is running on one instance, which what we call an instance. You can scale up almost instantaneously to multiple instances. In the preview, we limit it to three instances. I presume that once we go live, I mean, we haven't announced specific plans, but presumably you'll be able to go up to like a million instances if you wanted to. Probably have to call. if you want a million instances. But, you know, assuming you'd be able
sign
to go.
Sign a contract or something.
Yeah, yeah. A million, you probably need your, you know, your own
so firstborn or something. Reserved.
So, yeah, I'll get to that. Hang on. But if you notice that.
So are we now waiting for everything to provision?
No, it actually was almost instant. So let's do it again just so everyone can see.
Because that doesn't seem right.
Save. I know, it's sort of strange for Azure developers, but that was it. So we're on one. Now we're going to go to three, and we're saving, and it's done.
Nice.
Very nice.
So that's it. We scaled up, and so now we're basically on three different instances, which I don't know if we've given specific details about what an instance is in Windows Azure websites, but presumably you get more resources, a certain amount of
capacity.
Yeah, three units of capacity. I actually don't know if we've announced or if we even will announce what the exact details are, but you have more scale now. Now, the other thing is, this is the shared version. You can also go to a reserve version, mode. So with reserved, you can deploy multiple sites to a VM, but it's your VM. So you get your own, no one else is going to use it, so you can, and that's also very quick. Save. It's going to give you some warning, so it's going to actually change all of these different accounts or websites that I have deployed and move it over to my own VM. And this also only takes a little while.
Fast.
It's like a little bit more, as in like a second more. So, and that's done. So now what we've done is we've moved our site. We've actually moved, I have about six sites deployed. We've moved all six of those sites over to my own dedicated instance. And you'll note here, we can choose the instance size, just like you're familiar with. So we can have, right now we've got one. Let's go to a large, and let's go to three large instances. Click save. Click yes. And this takes a couple seconds. Succeeded.
Not bad.
So a few seconds to do that. So now we've gone from, we basically went from one, you know, one or two instances that were shared. We've moved six websites over to three large VMs. So now I have allocated 12 cores, 21 gigabytes of memory, and we did that in literally a few seconds. So that's really cool. I mean, this is really powerful. And then, you know, again, we're limited to three instances in preview. Presumably that will go up, so you'll be able to have a lot of instances. And you can deploy, if you notice, I actually had a WordPress site deployed. So you can, on one instance, share, you know, with a Node app, if you want to deploy Node, if you want to deploy .NET, if you want to deploy PHP, all together on the same one. And another cool thing with all the different languages is you actually don't need to tell us what language you're going to deploy to. You can just deploy a PHP site and it'll run. You can deploy a .NET site and it'll run. You can deploy a Node site and it'll run. You don't need to say this is a Node server, this is a PHP server.
We have all the libraries already on the instances.
Yep, we have all the libraries on the instances. We'll pull in Node packages that you depend on. All kinds of cool stuff like that. So, and then let me just make a change to the site really quick and redeploy, just so we can prove that deploying even to three extra large VMs is also super fast. So let me just change this to Windows Azure Web Sites.
Dragon.
And redeploy.
Publish started.
Published,
gets pretty awkward.
Done. Yeah, there's a slight awkward pause, but it's like 5 or 6 seconds instead of, you know, what you would have, a lot of Azure developers would have been used to is
5 or 8, 9 minutes.
Yeah. So we've got the site loading, and so now we have our cloud covered Dragon. It's going to load in a second.
So you're hitting the site for the first time now.
Yeah, the site's warming up, and presumably there's some startup stuff on the server. So we're hitting that, and now we have, again, three large instances load balanced for my website. So this is not, you know, this isn't a toy, right? Like, this is a very powerful set of web servers. I mean, this is my own pretty large web farm in the cloud that I could create, deploy to in a matter of seconds. So this is awesome for a web developer. I mean, I've been doing Windows Azure development for a long time, and a lot of the stuff I do are just simple websites, whether they be Node or ASP.NET. And this is really a dream for ease and for scalability.
And from what I understand, there's no reason this can't connect back to VMs or even worker roles back
on
Windows Azure.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, a really common scenario would be to use, you know, not only can you obviously use, like, SQL databases, or what are they now? Windows Azure
SQL databases.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, marketing fail there. But you can not only connect to our other services, storage, service bus, databases, but you could also connect to, say, a worker role running, running some
web
process,
API or something.
Yeah, an API, or say you needed to run a web API, but you had to do a custom installation of, some COM object or something. I could run that in a cloud service.
Right.
And then
you could also, this could also be an application that would connect through Windows Azure VMs or worker roles to connect back to your corporate network with Windows Azure Virtual Networks.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. So it's, I mean, I'm really happy with this. I've already, you know, I've been using it for a little while now, and I've deployed a ton of stuff to it. And it's funny because it's like, I actually have to give some talks coming up on this, and it's almost like so easy that you really can't fill an hour and a half. So I'm probably just going to deploy the same site 5 or 6 times and make, like, CSS changes just so...
No,
that way you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's the problem. They like, when we first started testing it, it took a little longer to upgrade. You know, when we were in, like, the staging environment or something, it would maybe take, like, 30 seconds or sometimes a minute to go up to, like, all the instances. Now they've just got it so fast that I'm really going to have a hard time filling up an hour and a half talk. So if you're coming to one of those webcams or Azure camps... We'll see how that goes.
Talking about staging, that's a good question. Does Windows Azure websites support a staging slot as well as a production slot?
So we don't now in preview. I know it's on the roadmap. We're not making any plans as far as when that's coming, but that's certainly something, I mean, a lot of people are going to ask for and have asked for. The thing is, though, because of the model, it really is such that, you know, you're doing a web deploy. It's so fast that, you know, you could very easily just have two different there's no swap, but because the deployment is so simple, right.
Deploy to staging test, deploy that same application to production.
It's the same deployment. And another thing is, like, a lot of times I actually, before Microsoft, when I would do deployments with cloud services, we would actually do that even with cloud services. We would have, like, our staging, testing, subscription, right. and then we'd have a production one. And we would just do deployments with TFS. So you can do TFS with TFS Team found it. What's it? Services instead of server. You can actually deploy to Windows Azure websites also. So you could have that model, but we don't have a swap model.
Are you doing a demo today of TFS or Git?
I'm not, but I actually am going to show Git. Yeah. So I just want one thing. I wanted to point out another couple things really quick. This also works in Visual Studio 2010. We've upgraded. Why is my? I have everything set to .NET 2. What is going on? What is going on around here?
You're working your way up.
Yeah, so I've been learning .NET or ASP.NET. So let's just make an ASP.NET web application. And we've released extensions. Or this is, I don't know what they're called. They're updates to Visual Studio 2010 that add the new new publish
profile
tool thingy-majigger. To Visual Studio 2010. So as you can see, we import that publish profile. I've got the same dialogue that I had in Visual Studio 2012 in Visual Studio 2011. And the last thing I wanted to show, not only do we have these empty websites we can deploy .NET websites, but we also have a gallery from Gallery. So you can deploy all your favorite gallery applications, such as I'm going to demo WordPress as the favorite one. So we have WordPress in here. You can create your WordPress site. WordPress 2.
Dragons.
Actually, does everyone know what Trogdor is? No. I bet you, I guarantee some people watching do. Trogdor Dragon. So the thing you'll note here also is create a new MySQL database.
Yeah,
so
that's pretty
cool. So we actually have partnered with ClearDB, and we're now offering, well, through them, you can actually host MySQL databases in Windows Azure
Windows Azure.
A service. So this is, normally if you wanted to do this, I mean, you would think, oh, I can do this, but I have to use a VM. This is actually a service just like SQL databases, Azure in the cloud, new name. I don't know. I'm going to get fired for that, but I can literally not remember what the new name is.
Windows Azure SQL Database.
Yes. So just fire me now. I'm never going to remember it. Okay, so we've got Trogdor the Dragon deployed and creates our new MySQL database. We can choose the region, and we check that we do have to agree to the ClearDB term since it is a partner. They're not Windows Azure. Deploy that, and we have, in a few seconds, a WordPress site running natively, really, in Windows Azure, which this is great because Wade, I know, is hosting his blog and his WordPress blog in Windows Azure. He wrote a blog post on it, and it was like a horrendously terrible amount of steps.
Millions.
Hack core Windows Azure. Do this, insert this, which worked, but this is obviously
a little simpler. Yeah. I mean,
and this does take a little longer to deploy because we are
provisioning
a database. We're copying the WordPress files. Right. And they're like setting up the config and everything. So now we've got Trogdor Dragon and let's go to that site just to prove that it works.
There it is.
So we've got our site now. Let's just name it Dragon.
Trogdor Dragons.
We're probably going to get sued for copyright infringement on the... it's only Medium.
What is it?
That's one of my real, but like that I don't care about passwords. I don't want this to appear in Google or Technorati. All right. So let's just go. We've got our admin. And voila, in just a few seconds, we have a WordPress site running in Windows Azure. Now, the last thing I want to do with that is show another really cool another really cool thing. Let's download this published profile. And we also just released Web Matrix 2 release candidate, open site, remote site, same published profile dialog here. And we can actually download that site, open that site in Web Matrix. And Web Matrix RC, I'm not going to go into too much detail because maybe we'll have a show on this or something, but it's got all kinds of new stuff, Obviously, it supports PHP, but it has like really great syntax highlighting and IntelliSense for PHP.
Nice.
And also for Node.js. So for those Node developers, that is really cool. Actually, let me just demo. That's too cool not to demo. Let's go new site from template. And we actually have Node.js, so we have a starter site. And for those that are Node developers, they'll know Express. Let's create a new Express website. And so the cool thing is the WebMatrix install from the Web Platform Installer is going to install all the Node.js dependencies. It's going to install Node Package Manager, all that stuff.
So you don't have to figure out how to untar or ungzip.
Correct, okay. Exactly. Well, there's a really good install, a really nice MSI installer experience. But this is better because it's all through WebPI. So our Node site was created. And now we have an Express Node website with awesome IntelliSense. Let's say HTTP equals require, and look at that. Even the Node modules. So this has Node modules that are native, and you'll see we have Jade installed. So it actually has IntelliSense for the Node modules we have installed, which this is really cool. This I don't think any other product has Node IntelliSense in this sense. I mean, so let's do Jade, require Jade. And if we install a new module, it'll detect that automatically and install that. And so then we also have full IntelliSense on, on like our Express app, all kinds of stuff. So configure, really everything you'd expect from really Visual Studio, .NET, C# type IntelliSense brought to WebMatrix Node.js. So that's really cool.
And the publish experience from WebMatrix is?
And the publish experience is also the same. Let's just import, let's publish over our Cloud Covered Dragon site. We don't need to do a compatibility test. We know that Windows Azure is compatible. So let's delete the files that aren't on the server. Continue.
Very nice.
And publish.
You don't have to go clean up all your old stuff whenever you're demoing it.
Exactly. And it's publishing all our files there. And let's open that up. And on that same, remember, this is the same one we just deployed .NET to.
This was the .NET one.
We didn't change any settings or anything, and now we have a Node.js Express website there. Nice. So, I think that's really cool. Very, very easy to use. And you could I showed them both separately, but we could have actually left the MVC stuff on there and actually had both of them running side by side. So, that's really all for this experience. I want to show one new experience which I think is pretty exciting for Windows Azure. Let's take a little quick break here and we'll set up for our next segment. So now we're back for segment 3. So you'll notice here that I actually have a Mac sitting in front of me. So this is pretty crazy. I think this might be certainly the first time a Mac has ever been on Cloud Cover. May very well be the first time that it's been in this studio. Steve Ballmer or Sanofsky may very well burst in here and take it from me. No, I'm just kidding. But so this is really unusual, right? We have a Mac. So what we've actually done is we've built Mac command lines for Windows Azure that run on Mac. So they're actually built on Node.js, so they actually would run on Mac. They run on Windows, they run on Linux even too. So we bring the experience of creating websites, creating VMs, setting up your deployment options, all kinds of stuff like that to the terminal in Macintosh, in Mac OS. And then also, since we now have Git deployment, we can create like our PHP site, our Node site, and deploy to Windows Azure using Git. So we have some technical difficulties here. Since, again, we've never used a Mac, we actually don't have recording whatnot.
It's kind of fans. Alien.
It's sort of alien, yeah. So we actually can't record in here, do a screen capture on the Mac. So I'm going to jump over to the other studio, record the demo, and we'll splice. We'll have Bob do his magic and edit that in. So let's jump over to Studio B. All right, so now I'm back in the studio. This is our other recording studio. So, again, we have some technical issues we need to work out in our main studio with the Mac, but Basically, I wanted to demo the new Mac OS experience for Windows Azure. You also may notice that I've changed shirts. That was merely to match with the background. I didn't record this on a different day at all. So when you go to the new Windows Azure website, you'll actually notice a bunch of new downloads. In particular, the Node.js download is what I want to show. So we actually now, on top of the Windows installer, have a Mac and Linux download. So I've actually already gone and downloaded that for the Mac. So let's go ahead and open that. And you'll see we've got a really nice install experience. Agree to that license. Always fun. And we'll go ahead and install those Mac CLI tools. And then we get a little bit of instructions here. So the thing you'll notice here is I downloaded the Node.js ones, but we've actually packaged all of them up together. So this is for Node.js, PHP, and Python developers all in one tool set. So let's go to the terminal here. New window, and we'll see we have our new Azure tools installed. We just type Azure, and we get a whole bunch of information. We've got that nice little ASCII art, which is pretty awesome. But you'll see here you can manage Windows Azure websites, VMs, and VM disks, all kinds of things like that. You can actually download log files. Really nice, really simple experience. So to create a Windows Azure website, just go Azure site, let's check out the help first. So we have, it's site create, but basically we've got all the commands here, site list, site create, portal. We can open the portal, browse to the site. So again, to create a new site, let's do Azure site create. And this one we'll call Studio B Dragon. So the one thing you're not seeing is here, I've actually already imported my published settings. Once you do that, you won't have to actually authenticate again. I already did that for brevity, but we're creating that site, and it's actually showing creating that site, and then we can actually browse to that. So Azure site browse Studio B Dragon. So that'll open up in the web browser, and we see our new site. We can also obviously log on to the Windows Azure portal. Which of course does work in Chrome on a Mac, Safari, and Firefox on a Mac. We obviously don't have Internet Explorer 10 on here. And we see our new site created, and then we can do a git. This is interesting to note. So since we created this deployment from the command line tools, it actually already went ahead and created. Enabled the git clone for us. So that's really the main way to publish from a Mac. You could obviously use FTP if you wanted to, but the publish profile downloads a web deploy setting, which is proprietary to Windows Visual Studio. So that's actually not available on the Mac. So for convenience, it actually enabled the git publish option for us. So let's go ahead and copy that URL. Oops. And go back to terminal, and let's just actually go ahead and create a directory, and let's go ahead and install Express. And configure that. So now we've got our site created. Let's go ahead and open app.js in Sublime. You see there that I had to test that. I forgot that that Express names the file app.js instead of server.js. So Windows Azure websites does require server.js to be the entry point. So let's go ahead and make an edit here, and then we'll go ahead and so we'll go ahead and save that as server.js. So we do need to change one thing. Instead of just listening on port 3000, we'll go process environment port. And let's save that as server.js. So switch back to the terminal. And let's initialize this as a Git repo. And add a remote. And we copied that repo earlier. So let's go ahead and push that up to Windows Azure. Git push Azure master. Enter our deployment password. I've previously set up again the deployment credentials. And you see there, that's one interesting thing to note. We're not actually, I forgot, I didn't add a git ignore, but you don't actually need to push your package source up to Windows Azure. We actually run npm on the server, which is really nice. I didn't actually do that. I didn't exclude the package files. But again, we run npm on the server. I believe we actually cache packages and things, so that deployment is quite quick. I've actually compared it to several other different deployment options, like that are available on some of the competing products, and I've actually found that Windows Azure websites often deploys even faster than some of the competitors, and I think part of that is because we do cache some of those packages, things like that. So really, really quick, really easy, and then we can go. Let's just use the URL now. We can just go back to that site, and we should see the default Express web app. So that's really the experience. There's a similar experience for PHP. You can obviously deploy a PHP app or a Python app using Git. Same set of command line tools. Nothing really specific to note here in the command line tools. So one other interesting thing to note, for those that are familiar, Windows Azure Websites uses IIS Node. So you see in here, we actually don't have an app.config file. We could have added one and customized it. We also could have added IIS Node accepts YAML config file also. So we didn't actually add that to our package. Windows Azure Websites is smart enough to it actually detects if it's a Node.js application and adds the default web.config file, because you wouldn't actually, you wouldn't want to deploy that site without that config and actually have that deployment break on the first time. So we kind of take care of some of those details for you, which I think is really nice. But a really quick deployment experience, a really easy and powerful set of command line tools to use, works in a Mac. Really can't get any simpler than that. So with that, let's go back to the studio and join Michael and Nick again and continue on with the rest of the show. All right, well, now we've seen VMs, websites, the Mac, OS X,
commandlets.
I'm exhausted now. This is an epic show, so we have, now Nick is going to show the new stuff with cloud services, the new Windows Azure SDK, and the tooling in Visual Studio, particularly in Visual Studio 2012. So go ahead.
Okay, so as you can see, we're still here in the portal, and we're actually selected the Cloud Services tab here. So if you wanted to spin up a new cloud service, you can use that new button there, and you can come in, you can do a custom create, you can provide a URL, my URL, come down, and if you have a package to deploy, you can click on it to go and deploy that. I haven't created a package at the moment, but we can go off and have that go and reserve that service for us. Right, so this is the new portal, and we've clicked into our cloud services. So now we can see on the left that all my cloud services are listed for my subscriptions. Now, within the dashboard, we can get a nice graphical or visual representation of some of the performance counters that this particular cloud service is publishing out to storage. So in this case, we can see our CPU utilization here over the duration of 1 hour. You can go and change that to view it for a longer period of time.
Cool.
But what I think is really useful with this is if you have, say, performance counters like your ASP.NET failed requests and such, you can start seeing when there's possibly issues there with your application.
Right. Maybe, your database failed or something, and you see a big spike in exceptions or something.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah. So that's the dashboard. The dashboard there does surface some other things, but monitoring is where you can go for more in-depth on that particular one there. If we come over to configure, I find this is sort of really nice way that they've surfaced up some of the app settings that are within your CSCFG. So if you look here, you can see that the settings there are here and available for me to change on the fly, so they can be applied directly to my role.
It's a much nicer editor. Before, you had to open up that whole XML file. Yep. And just change it. Now they kind of surface each setting individually. So yep. It's quite nice.
Yeah, exactly. So I find this really useful. So let's move on and just see what else we've got. We've also got the ability to go and scale out your role, similar to as we've seen in Windows Azure websites. But we should be able to scale to a lot more cores.
And I like how it shows cores used by this role, and then the dark gray is the total used by your account, and it actually shows you the available. So it looks like in this account, your quota is set to 60 or so, 62 instances. Yep. So which I think is quite cool. And again, you could have done this before, but it's a much nicer, much easier experience to see rather than just going and hacking an XML file.
Yep. But I won't spin up additional ones there, but that's available to you now in the portal as well. It was always there before, but you'd be changing it within the
XML file.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that really isn't a great experience, but now you've got a nice little slider.
Right, and you also didn't have the visualization of how many cores you had available. So this, like you said, this shows you a lot more of what capacity you have available.
Yeah, before you could go change it to, say, a million, and you just get a, I've been on a million.
I think it's an error.
Yeah, you'll get it. You'll get an error that, you know, you hit save, and then it says, cannot do this. You don't have you don't have this availability, whereas now you can see in one screen everything. So.
Yeah, in the old portal, it did say that you've got, like, 40 out of 60 cores if you selected the subscription.
Yep.
But it just wasn't as nice and as intuitive as this.
Wasn't in the same place either as you updated.
Right. Cool. Yeah, so now you can see all your instances here. Cool. You can go and connect out to them if you've enabled RDP. You can see linked resources. So if you're utilizing, say, a Windows Azure SQL database, you can see that that's as a linked resource there for that particular cloud service. You can go out and connect to that via that.
And linked resources, we should explain, that's sort of that's a new concept in the portal.
Yes.
That actually exists in websites. It exists in VMs too, correct?
Right.
And so this is basically a way for you to say, if you're building a cloud service that relies on a storage account and a database to actually link them all together. It's really not changing anything underlying.
It's a visualization.
But it also makes it so, like, when you what is the storage account I'm using? You can kind of see, I don't want to delete that. It's actually part of this application.
Right.
So it helps you lump, for this account, you see that there's, 40 different cloud services deployed. We've got, the Tankster demo, social games, all kinds of stuff. You know, sometimes when you're trying to clean stuff up, you want to know, is this storage account associated with anything? And you can easily see now in the portal what application that's part of.
Yep.
So I think that's a pretty nice feature.
Yep. And lastly, certificates, so management certs.
Cool. I've seen them. Upload per service.
Add new ones. Very cool.
Yep. So let's change gears a bit here, because I'm really excited to sort of show people the tooling advancements that we've got in SDK 1.7 with tools. And so now we're here and we've got VS 2012, and the new tools support VS 2012. So you can now do your cloud projects within VS here.
Which, that was your big announcement you had, which apparently I stole a little while ago. Sorry about that.
but that's okay. You only showed, pure Windows Azure websites. But cloud services too are supported here now. So this is Windows Azure SDK 1.7. You can get that from the web PI feed. So if I do file new project here, what we can see, let's just select cloud. We've got our standard Windows Azure cloud service. So I can OK into this. Now, we've got a few new options here, which are pretty cool. We've got a cache worker role, which we'll come to in a little bit. And we've also got a worker role with service bus. So these are two new templates that are provided out of the box in the file new project experience here for your cloud service. So perhaps we'll use a worker role, hit next, press OK. So this is going to go and create our standard solution, but in this case it's been geared for using service bus. But before we jump into that, I'd like to sort of look at some of the other changes that we've got within the way this thing is packaged and such. So if I go to properties here, on my cloud project, we can see that we're using Windows Azure Tools version June 2012. If you did have an old project that's using, say, SDK 1.7, there'll be an upgrade button
1.6.
here. 1.6, sorry.
Yeah. And you can run them side by side or upgrade them.
That's exactly right. But the cool thing is the tool surfaces an upgrade button, which makes it somewhat seamless for you.
And it's optional. Like, whereas before, you couldn't run... I mean, 1.6 was the first one that supported side-by-side. Right. So, but before, if you went and installed 1.6, you had to upgrade
everything.
From now on, it's going to be optional. You can, or you can leave it at the old one.
Yep. So, one thing I'd like to point out here is now, the tooling here in 1.7 allows you to utilize IIS Express and LocalDB. So that's a pretty cool improvement from what we had before.
Which means you don't have to install, you no longer have to have full IIS installed in your computer, right?
And you don't need SQL Express installed either.
Nice.
Lots of dependencies gone now.
Yep. So let's keep going here. So this dropped in a worker role, right? So one of the key differences between Windows Azure websites and cloud services is the concept of a worker role. So for our existing Azure devs, they probably know what a worker role is. But for those that aren't familiar with it, it's similar to a Windows service. It's something with well-defined entry points. It's got an on-start, it's got a run, which runs forever, and you've got an on-stop. Now, the run method typically goes out and does some form of background processing. But in any case, what I'd like to sort of show you here is if we come down and we look at endpoints, so some of the key networking improvements that we've got here, let's have a look at the different types of endpoints we can have. So if we have our standard input endpoint, so this is something publicly facing, you'll notice that we've now got the UDP option here. So that's pretty cool for gaming scenarios and such, right, Nate?
Yeah, gaming and...
Streaming,
yeah, a bunch
DNS.
Of, yep.
All kinds of advanced networking.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of customers asking for this, and now it's here, and you can go and configure it. So let's have a look what else we've got here. So we've also got instance input. So this one essentially allows you to address an instance, a specific instance, publicly. Mm-hmm. So here, if I had 7.107.11, how many is that? 3, 4. If I had 4 instances here, the 10.107 port would then address specifically that instance.
The first instance,
yep.
and you have a range, so it just hits it in order. If you deploy instance 0 is the first in that range, and so on and so forth, which means through ports you could build an app that requires somewhat of a sticky session type scenario.
It's similar concept to what we showed in VMs with port forwarding, where you can have a public port and a private port, except this does it automatically for you since you have multiple instances.
Yep. So let's go to the last one. So the last one is going to be an internal endpoint. Now, one of the cool changes with internal endpoints now is you can say that I want to target any protocol. So that's cool from that perspective.
And what that allows you to do is you don't have to care what the protocol is or what the port. Because by default, that's actually how the endpoints are on VMs. They have the any endpoint. Yep.
Cool.
Yep. Cool. So let's move this along, and perhaps the last thing I'd like to point out in the config here is this concept of caching. So we do have the Windows Azure Caching Service, but now we've got this new thing here in the caching tab that essentially allows you to make better use of your compute resources. Say if you've got a worker role or web role that's deployed, you can consume the remaining resources on that machine, say whatever RAM is left over, for a caching service. So you can do that in role, or you can have a dedicated role. So in this particular case, if I have this worker role and it's there, I may say I want the cache to use, you know, a particular size or percentage of the remaining memory. Dedicated role is more for if you want to deploy, say, a worker that's a full dedicated caching service out into the cloud.
And this allows you to run. I mean, the advantage of this over the caching service is that it's actually on the same. It's, you know, they're sort of co-located together. They could be on the same virtual network, so you reduce that latency even further.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And cost savings, obviously, utilizing stuff which isn't really used by your current solution.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, if you have a worker role that processes something only at night or whatever, but you really keep it deployed, you could use. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. So then down here, if you're someone that wants to sort of break that cache up into a number of named caches, you can do that. You can go and specify eviction policies and that sort of thing. So pretty cool feature, quite powerful.
Very powerful.
One thing to note also on the caching services, we actually now support a Memcached D and it's just the protocol. So it's still this velocity or you know whatever our caching service is.
It's velocity.
Velocity caching, yeah. So it's still that in the background, but we expose it now as Memcached protocol also. So you can, you know, say you have a PHP app.
Existing apps.
You can use, you can just use this and actually use this, you know, say our WordPress app that we deployed earlier, we could add the Memcache plugin to that, point it directly to this, and it should just work.
Yep. Now we've got our, we created a new project, a worker role service bus template. So let's have a quick look at what that provides you. And we'll look at some of the improved tooling in the Server Explorer that we've got here right within VS. So I've got my worker role here. If we click into it, you can see essentially in the run method, it's just going and receiving messages off a queue. So by default with this particular template, when you create it, it provides a setting here where you can go off and specify your connection string for your service bus namespace and queue. So what I've got over in the left...
That's actually another interesting thing to note is we've changed the configuration in the SDK. So now by default, it always looks for connection. So for Service Bus, for example, it's looking for that connection string called Microsoft Service Bus Connection String. It will look for that setting both in the web config or app config,
service config,
app settings, or it'll look in the CFCFG file. You don't need to do that manually. A lot of people wrote custom code.
Yep.
So I think that's a really nice improvement too for configuration.
Right. So what we can do here is I've already done a connect over here in my Server Explorer. Now, brand new, you've now got the Windows Azure Service Bus as an item within there. So you can go and do things with your queues and Service Bus namespaces, which is pretty cool. So if I go to the properties on this one that I've provisioned earlier, we can come along and we can say, well, our namespace is Win8 Service Bus, and we can drop that straight into the templated connection string that we've got here. So I can drop this in like this. And then I can get my key like that, and we can go and drop that in here. And now essentially we've got a worker role that's ready to go and use and consume messages from this service bus.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
So let's go and have a quick look at the code here. One thing I'd like to change is I'm just going to change what we're printing to make it a little bit more interesting. So let's print the label. Now I'm going to spin this up. So, while that spins up, I'm just going to pin this guy down here because this is a new dev machine that I essentially repaved just before the show. So now that that's running, what we can do is we can come and look at our compute emulator. And we can see our worker role spun up. We've got one instance of it there. If we scroll down, it's ready to run. So if we bring that down there and we come over back to our queues, one of the cool things that I like about the new Server Explorer for Service Bus is we can go and we can send and receive messages directly from here. So anyone who's been developing these scenarios before, it's really going to save you a lot of time for testing because you're not going to have to go and write the code to do that. So we can send a test message there, and then this is saying, yes, we've enqueued that test message. Can come back to here, and you can see that test message sent, so we've actually received that off the queue.
Cool.
So quite a cool little add-in for the Server Explorer. Windows Azure Storage is still there as it was in the past, and with Windows Azure Virtual Machines, if you've connected that up to your subscription, then it will pull down a list of all your VMs, and if they've got remote desktop enabled, can double-click on that and it'll shoot you straight into to the login for that.
VMs.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So that's really cool. So that's a little bit in terms of we've got a couple new templates there. We've got some improvements to networking. We've now got a caching service or the ability to utilize unconsumed compute for a caching service. Updates to Server Explorer.
So that was quite a bit of stuff. We had a ton of ton of new features, cloud services, websites, VMs, the new portal. I mean, this is a huge release. This is probably the biggest Azure release ever, minus the when Windows Azure was released, maybe. So a lot of great new things. I think with that, it's time for our I guess it's that time again. So let's go to the tip of the week. We'll be right back. So, if anyone is really still watching this ridiculously long show, we literally do not have a tip of the week this week. We spent all our time preparing for that segment, which, looking at my clock, this is definitely going to be the longest episode of Cloud Cover ever. So I'm going to say the tip of the week is go try this stuff out. You can go to the new portal, click the preview features, and request to enable those, and try out the new websites, try out the new VMs, and let us know what you think. So we're going to, in the coming months, this is actually going to be one of our last shows for a little while. We're basically all going and traveling around for Tech Ed. Both tech eds. We're going to a bunch of dev camps. So actually, we'll put a link, but look at our dev camps. We'll all be speaking at dev camps. I'm in Buenos Aires, Sao Paulo, Brazil, London. You'll be in Australia and the state of New Zealand.
Completely separate
in a different country. And Michael, you'll be...
I'm just going to London.
Just London, okay. So he's lazy and no, just kidding. So, but we'll be everywhere. So yeah, definitely register for those dev camps. Watch Tech Ed. Tech Ed will be streamed live. The Learn Windows Azure event was yesterday. The videos should be available or will be available soon. But yeah, give it a try. Let us know what you think. And we'll have, when we come back in July, we're going to start diving into, we'll have deep dives into the websites, into VMs. We'll go more into the Linux stuff, the Mac stuff. So
all kinds of good stuff is coming up.
Yeah, lots. I mean, this is a big release, and it's going to take us a while to cover it all in Cloud Cover. So if anyone is still watching, thank you for joining us this week. And we'll see you again in about a month.